Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. I'm so glad you guys are tuning into this episode. Whatever it is that you're dealing with today specifically or going through at the moment, I just hope that your takeaway from this episode is going to give you what you need. Is it hope, inspiration, validation, some tips on how to treat this or detox more affordable? Whatever it is that you need today, I hope that that's what you get from this episode. And if you want to continue to help me share my voice and our voice in the community, please go into the about of this podcast, scroll to the bottom, click on that donation link. Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. And my guest today is a naturopath and an acupuncturist, Dr. V. Semelis. She is out of Restorative Health Clinic of Portland, Oregon, which doesn't happen to be too awfully far from me. And I know that she really specializes in cell membrane therapy, which I recently had learned a little bit about it. But she is so, so well-versed in many other topics that surround this whole Lyme and Beyond thing, right? The Lyme umbrella. And there's a few of them that don't get talked about a lot. And so I really kind of want to dive in with her today about those. And so we're going to just talk about many different topics today. I'm super excited. So welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm glad we met.
Yes, this is fun. And we were just chatting right before we started recording. So normally I don't ever meet my guests, right? Because we do this on Zoom. And I actually got to meet Dr. Semelis at the ILADS conference not very long ago. So it's really fun to be able to have a guest on that I actually feel like I know. So that just makes it funner, right?
Yes, it does. It does.
All right. So where are we going to start? I know, like I had mentioned, and also I previously had your colleague, Dr. Stein, on the show with me. And that's when we really kind of dove into the cell membrane therapy, which was all new to me. So that was fascinating to learn about. But there's a couple other topics that I really want to touch on, make sure, because I'll go on. Next thing you know, our hour is up. I'm like, hey, I didn't talk about what I really wanted to talk about. So if you don't mind, I'd love to just kind of dive into those first. And so the two topics are MCAS, right? Mm-hmm. Mast cell activation syndrome, or POTS. Mm-hmm. And I know that a lot of people aren't even familiar with POTS. A lot of people are familiar with MCAS, but don't really know maybe what it is, or is it really MCAS, or is it something else? And so if you can just kind of shed some light on what these things are, right? Like how our body responds to them. Is there a way, or maybe there's not, to know if it really is what they're saying it is, or is it something else? So
Perfect. So MCAS stands for mast cell activation syndrome. And I like to think of it on a spectrum. And I also like to think of POTS, which is postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome.
That's why I let you take that
one. I'll say those a couple of times. But they're kind of on the spectrum. And what's going on there is inappropriate responses to the environment. So this happens when we have high burden of infection, high burden of toxins, high stress involved, maybe an injury. So any of those things can lead to mast cell activation syndrome or postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. So let's start with MCAS since people are a little bit more familiar with that. MCAS itself is really more of a clinical diagnosis. There is something called mastocytosis, which is where you have more mast cells than you should. And that's something that could be diagnosed via biopsy. But for most people in the MCAS umbrella, it's not something that shows up on a lab test per se. While there are lab tests to rule in or out, but they're not very precise. They're not sensitive or that specific because it's very much, so mast cells are a type of immune cell and they release histamines. And histamines are the things that cause allergy type of symptoms, right? Runny nose, itchy eye, swelling hives, things like that. All the things we consider to be allergy type of symptoms. Histamines in a mast cell activation situation can also cause tachycardia. So rapid heart rate can cause a sense of anxiety in the body, flushing, diarrhea, nausea. So it can cause a lot of other symptoms. Pain is another thing that it can cause. So the symptoms look a lot like all these other things that we're already dealing with if we get to MCAS, right? Usually we don't get to MCAS in the absence of like chronic Lyme disease or some sort of chronic illness,
right?
Mold exposure, et cetera. So we're not just going to wake up and develop MCAS.
Okay, good. And that was a great description, right?
Because
there's many of us, I mean, I dealt with it too, but there's many of us, whether we're even new to our Lyme journey or not, that people, you know, you see on social media sites, people MCAS. Well, what does that mean, right? We need to remember that there's so many people that are unfamiliar or new to the Lyme world, right? And so I like to break things down very, very big or small, whichever way you want to look at it, right? And so just so that we can totally understand, because it will give them the knowledge to be able to bring to their practitioner, right? If it is not something that has been brought up and say, hey, what about this, right? I learned that this is this, I have these, you know, so it's, I just think it's great to kind of really educate people that are not educated about all the different topics. And there's many of them, right?
Yes.
So even by what you were just saying with MCAS, it can cause like the tachycardia and stuff. Does that kind of fall in line with the POTS? So are they kind of can be
they're
combined
related.
As well?
They're related.
Okay.
They're a little bit of
I
a
didn't
triad.
know that.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah, they're
I didn't
related.
know that.
There is a overlap of MCAS, POTS, and hypermobility,
Oh,
actually.
okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Did not know that.
So people who have hypermobility, Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, for instance, they can have a higher chance of developing MCAS and a higher chance of developing POTS. So there is overlap between those three syndromes.
That's interesting you say that, because there you know, right, that there are so many people that get misdiagnosed with things. And a lot of them is, you know, I hear a lot about Ehlers-Danlos syndrome.
Yes.
And that was just very interesting that you said that there's like this kind of little triad with them. Okay.
And if we step back and think, what's going on with the body? You know, this is inappropriate ways for that the body's responding to the environment. There is enough stressor on the body that the immune system no longer is getting the right signals or no longer can respond properly to the environment. Because normally histamines are released. They were originally designed to fight off parasites.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, and like break down our foods and things, but mainly parasites. In the modern world, because we don't know, most people don't think we have parasites. We do, but you know, those
we
like
definitely do, right?
Definitely
We don't
do.
Like the thought of it, but
we
we
don't
do.
like to think about it. We do have parasites, but more people have allergies. So this is like already a little improper immune response where maybe we live in too sterile of an environment. The immune system didn't know what it's supposed to react to. Now it's reacting to things like pollen or foods, et cetera. So that's all fine. But when we go all the way to MCAS, now this is where, symptomatically, what I tell people is it's like, oh, one day you're reacting to this food. Maybe the next day you're fine. Today you're like fragrances are causing your throat to swell up. And the next day that same fragrance might not. So the triggers are a little unpredictable and it's not. You might be reacting to everything. Like you start to lose your tolerance to outside stimuli, and the reactions are not predictable. They're not always the same. Whereas a true allergy would be like every time I eat peanuts, you know, this is what happens, and you can predict that response.
Right.
But with MCAS,
so
it's not like that.
And that was interesting. I didn't realize that with MCAS is that you could have a reaction to perfume one day and then not, right? Gosh, that sounds a lot like Lyme disease. Today I can't walk, but tomorrow I can, you know? Like, and so could it also be the opposite? If it's MCAS that we're really dealing with, can you always be allergic to that perfume?
Absolutely,
Okay, so it
because
can be
you know,
either
it can
or.
be extremely. So now it's kind of like if you have an open wound and the wound didn't heal, every time you touch it, it's going to be painful. If you touch healed skin, it's not going to be painful. But if it's already open, you're going to touch it. It's going to be painful every time. And so there's this re-injury that happens, or this sensitivity that happens, where at a certain level of mast cell activation, your mast cells are overly sensitive to all stimuli. It's going to react more and more and more. And if you're not clearing your histamine, so these are some of the ways that we deal with MCAS, is we get antihistamines on board. We help the DAO enzyme, which is what breaks down histamines in the body. So all these different ways that we're keeping those mast cells stable. If we don't have that on board, we can increasingly have more reactions to more and more things.
Okay,
Does that make
very
sense?
interesting. Yes, for sure it does. And so, if you are dealing with MCAS and you're trying to treat, is it, and I've heard both sides, right? Every practitioner is going to give you a little bit of a variance of an answer, and that's, there's nothing wrong with it, right? Our bodies are all so different, and there's not one defined
Everybody's
answer for
different.
any of us, a 1,000,000%. But in your opinion or in your practice, do you tend to get the mast cell kind of under control before you start treating? You know, like a
You
lot of
have
p
to.
practitioners say, get the mold under control before you start treating, or, build
Yeah,
the
the
immunity up
MCAS is
before you treating.
first.
Okay, so that is first, because otherwise your body's just gonna, it's already all over the place. And so now we're just gonna react to everything. And could that also be a reason why somebody might be extremely sensitive to one drop of a tincture?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So I think it's a combination of limbic system and MCAS, and they're related.
Okay.
If we don't get MCAS under control, we kind of can't move forward with treatment, because you will react to the treatments that we're giving you. And it's not a either or, it's a both and, but the MCAS does have to take a little priority, because what we find is we have such severe patients that, they cannot handle any of the things that we give them. And even
Right.
maybe the limbic system retraining program is aggravating their nervous system. So it's like, okay, well,
Oh,
what do we
really?
do?
Wow. Okay.
What do we do? Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. So, and that would make sense with, why some people, they're like, they take a tincture, right? They do one, they're like, I'm allergic to it. So they really truly probably believe that they're allergic to it. But then on the outside, we're looking like, you are not allergic to everything, right? Like, this is a
You
herx.
can't
This is
possibly
a
be. Yeah.
what is this?
Right.
So more than likely it is really this histamine that is responding in their body, and which of course makes it feel like they're allergic to it, right?
Yes. And they are having that reaction, and it can be anaphylactic, right? People can have anaphylactic reactions when they're in mast cell activation syndrome. So we do need to take it very seriously. And what I like to talk to my patients about is our body's going through this journey. And just because it's here now doesn't mean it's going to be here tomorrow or a few months from now. So just because you reacted in the past to this one thing doesn't mean we can't try it in the future. It might just not have been the right time for that intervention. So just reestablishing a little bit of safety around, like, okay, when you were in mold and when you were having undiagnosed Lyme and you were doing all this stuff and you were eating, whatever every day, really inflammatory foods, yeah, you probably had reactions to everything. But let's 4 months down the road, we might reintroduce one of those things. And I need people to not anticipate that they're going to have a negative reaction to that, as much as we can, that nervous system retraining, like, okay, like I should be able to eat more foods. I shouldn't be limited to three foods. Like,
Our
that is not how
mindset,
to body.
right? Like our mindset, we are our words, we are our thoughts. And so, yes, but that was a really great point that you just brought up, because when we go through this journey, right? Like, we're just all over the place anyways. A lot of us don't even have a life anymore, right? We may have lost relationships. There's just so much that this journey takes from us. But diet is such an important piece to healing our bodies. And I love that you said that just because we can't have it now doesn't mean we can't reintroduce it. And I always like to remind people that Seafood is my favorite thing, right? Well,
Mine
I
too.
had high levels of mercury toxicity and a few other metal toxicities in my body. And my practitioner said, "You are not having any seafood." And I was like, "What?" So I did it. I still eat it 2-3 times a week now. I'm perfectly fine. And so people need to remember that not everything is forever, but if you want to heal your body from all these pathogens that are taking us over, there are some things you have to
Sacrifices.
just do. Yes, sacrifices that
Absolutely,
you have to do. So thank you
sacrifices.
for bringing that up because I think it's very important for people to know that. But then also when you're reintroducing it, right? Don't be like, "I can't eat this, I can't eat this," and then put it in your mouth because your brain's going to tell you really can't eat it, right?
Exactly. It's like both sides of it. It's like, hey, I know I'm asking you to take a lot of supplements and cut out a lot of things that you love. It's not forever, just for a short time. We're gonna get through this together. And then on the other side, I also need to work with you and have you trust your body's ability to handle more.
Right. Yes, for sure. Okay, so you said something interesting as well about the limbic system being part of this mast cell. So I always like to try to dig out some free tips from my practitioners that join me, right? What can we give the listeners for free? I love it. And so the limbic system is part of our nervous system. There are many, and I share this on my Lyme and Beyond with Tanya Facebook page all the time, different tips and tricks and things, free things you can do at home, right? Like we can help our nervous system by, taking a cold shower or breathing exercise, just so many ways to help that. Is that something that maybe somebody should kind of look into if they're at home, they're dealing, maybe they're not necessarily working with a practitioner right now or trying to find one or just trying to get their bearings straight about what's going on with their body? Would you recommend different things to help your nervous system? And could that in turn really have any effect on the mast cell symptoms that you're having?
Absolutely. There's so many ways to address the limbic system. I think I'm going to take a step back and address something that you said earlier, which is like people say you can't get better until you do this. You can't get better until you address this. And I don't like that framing because so many of my patients come in and they are in a tizzy because they read, this person said you can't get better until you get out of mold. This person said you can't get better until you completely change your diet and only eat raw foods or what have you, and they are hearing so many different things of what they are not currently able to implement. And therefore, the message that they're getting is, I can't get better because I can't implement this one thing. And I just want to disabuse people of that notion because it's not helpful for our patients to feel like, well, if I can't take that step, then I will never, that I will always be sick and I can't make progress.
Dr. Samelis, oh my gosh, thank you. I'm so glad that you just backed up to that because you're absolutely right. And I'm going to share just a small piece of my journey. And of course, that's why I do what I do when I do this podcast, because for 7 years, I couldn't get a diagnosis other than you're overworked, you're overstressed, you're depressed. If you don't go to therapy, you'll never get well. So I became suicidal. If I can't get well, what hope do I have? Right. And so many of us lose hope in our journeys. And, that is why I do my podcast, to bring hope and inspiration to anybody listening out there that you can and will get well. Right. It's a lot of work, but you can do it because
It's a lot
millions
of
of
work.
us are walking proof that it can be done. But what you just said is that's true. So many of us, whatever the dynamics are, right, we can't always do everything that somebody online tells us to do, or even that our practitioner is telling us to do for whatever reason, we can't. But that does not mean you can't get well. And so I'm so thankful you just brought that up because I think it's very important. What I do say, and again, I'm just a Lyme patient, right? Not a practitioner, but what I do tell people a lot, and I don't know, maybe do I need to reframe this as well? So I tell people there are a list of things I feel that you have to address if you want to get well. And that is, of course, we've got to kill some pathogens, right? But detoxing is just as important. Addressing mold, addressing parasites, addressing your nervous system, addressing any blocked traumas, and just working through the whole emotional PTSD thing of this whole illness. And I do say that if you don't address every one of those, you either won't get well or you won't stay well. I don't know. Yeah. Do I need new terminology for that? Because you hit a nail with me on that because it is so important that we don't let anybody take away our hope of getting well because I can't do this, or I can't move out of a moldy house, or I can't do this, or I can't, you know, there's so many of those can'ts.
Yes. I don't disagree with you at all. I do think like if we are aiming for optimal health and if we are aiming for resilience, like the maximum resilience we can really have, we do have to address all of those things, or we probably need to address all of those things. The body is very resilient. It's made to heal, right? And the spirit is very resilient. It's made to heal. It's made to, you know, it's limitless. And so I, many of our patients are quite type A, right? Maybe a correlation there. I'm saying that as somebody who also has dealt with many illnesses. So I'm not excusing myself from that bucket. And because of that personality type, we like to be perfect. We want to do all the things. I'm motivated. Give me all the things I'm going to do. I'm going to do it. And if I can't do it, I feel like a failure. And that this is just not very helpful for our overall health as well as our mental health, right? So it's like, hey, especially when you're really sick and you're brain fogged and you can't barely get out of bed and you're, you know, you're struggling with your relationships, et cetera. It's like, okay, what can you do? If all you can do is tell yourself that there is hope, like this is not a permanent place that you have to be, that is doing more for yourself than not.
Yes.
So start there. I like to tell people, okay, this is a place you're visiting, but don't change your address. You're not moving here permanently.
Right, right. You are just passing through this journey. And that's important too, because, you know, when people are bedridden or in a wheelchair, immobility, whatever it may be, and they're like, I can't do anything. Well, there is. You can do something, right? Whether it's sitting there and thinking positive thoughts to yourself, or whether it is walking outside and sitting in a chair and breathing in fresh air, like that is good for our body, right? There's always something we can do.
Yeah.
And there's always something to be grateful for. And those are, they're just so important that they sound so simple and maybe silly, but we know how important they are in this journey.
And it takes a lot of effort when you are feeling all of your symptoms and all your doctors have said, there's nothing I can do for you. They don't believe what you have going on. You know, the people in your life don't understand what you're going through and they kind of think you're making it up, right? It is really, it does take a lot of effort to say, no, this is not where I'm meant to be for the rest of my life. I know I can get better and I'm going to find whatever little energy I have to get myself in the right place with the right practitioner so that I can heal. That takes a lot.
It does. Yeah.
It takes a lot.
It absolutely does. And you know, we don't have a lot of energy when we're going through this journey. Right. And so our body, there's certain things that it takes energy to do, like detoxing. Right. So let's not waste the little bit of energy that we have on people who don't believe us, right? Or on the fact that you feel like you can't really do anything, right? Focus that little energy that you have on something positive, something that is going to benefit your healing journey.
Yes.
It's not easy. I get it, right? Nothing
is easy. You don't have to convince anybody.
Nothing is easy.
Don't waste your energy trying to convince practitioners that you have what you have. If they don't want to do, you know, just move on, find a different one. Don't waste energy on convincing your family members, you know, whatever, if they'll get it eventually or they won't, but you have precious little energy. You just got to focus it on you and getting better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so we dove off a little bit there.
Yeah,
So
we did. We
sorry
did. Got
about that,
off.
but
No,
all good
it's
stuff, like
okay.
just things that we don't talk about often. So let's kind of go back to the MCAS and with the POTS and kind of how that is all related.
Yes. Okay. So MCAS, the first thing we got to do is just stabilize that system. So we are usually throwing a bunch of antihistamines, mast cell stabilizers, DAO enzyme, or other enzymes on board. If you try an antihistamine and it didn't do anything for you, doesn't mean that antihistamine didn't work. When we're in MCAS, we need a lot of intervention to stabilize that system. So it might be that you have to layer on. So don't give up like, oh, I tried Claritin and didn't do it. Yeah, because you have MCAS, you don't just have seasonal allergies. Like there's a really dysfunctional immune system we're working with. You might have to do higher amounts of Claritin and add on Pepcid and add on, we might have you on five different antihistamines just to stabilize that system. Once that's stabilized, we can maybe work on the detoxification or the pathogen that led you into that MCAS in the first place.
Right.
And then the overlap with POTS is that POTS really falls under the umbrella of dysautonomia, is kind of the larger idea, which
Okay.
is that there is a dysfunction in the autonomic nervous system, usually due to the same things that cause MCAS: infections, toxins, stressors, injuries. So there's a nervous system component. It's like the nervous system version of the immune thing that happens with MCAS. And that's why they are related, because probably the same triggers are going to push you into POTS as MCAS. And a lot of my patients have both.
Okay, so a couple things on that. You had mentioned earlier, you're not just all of a sudden going to have MCAS. Hey, I just have MCAS, right? Like I don't have Lyme, nothing else is going on in my body. So if POTS is more related to the autonomic nervous system, that could be triggered by whatever, and environmental toxins, emotional, physical trauma, whatever it may be. Can you just have POTS?
You're likely not going to just have POTS unless you have pretty severe hypermobile EDS.
Okay.
So my patients who have like a genetic condition. So some of the things that can lead to POTS is it's really about the brain. So sometimes it is like a really high neuroinflammation or poor circulation to the brain. Poor vascular tone is going to lead to a POTS type of syndrome. So that's also actually on a spectrum. Just because you fail the tilt table test doesn't mean you don't have some dysautonomia. It doesn't mean you are on that spectrum of POTS. Maybe you're not full on diagnosed POTS, but you are still having racing heart, dizziness, fainting, heart issues that come along with POTS. So don't let people tell you, you're nothing's
Is
wrong because you
there
didn't.
anything in this Lyme world that is cut and dry?
No, there's
No.
not.
Okay.
There's not.
Wrong
It's, yeah.
answer. No.
Yeah, there's not. There's not. There's just
There
like,
just
yeah,
really isn't, is there? Oh my gosh. And
not. I
that's what
wish
makes
there
it so
was.
hard, I think.
Yes, because a lot of more conventional doctors are going to be like very box-like, right? If you don't fit in this box, if you don't check off all the things, then you're not that, and we don't know what to do with you. But of
Right.
course, usually to get there, you kind of move towards there. You're not just like one day you wake up and you have POTS, unless you had a brain injury or something, cancer or something like that going on that's so impactful suddenly that you would wake up one day and have POTS.
Okay, and that makes sense. So if you say that, if you have MCAS and it's really bad, like we need to address that first, right? Let's get the body calmed down a little bit so it can even tolerate any type of treatment that you're going to do. So where does POTS lie in that? So let's say somebody, because I'm assuming somebody can have POTS and not MCAS.
Yes, people can have POTS and not MCAS, or MCAS and not POTS.
Okay.
And then there's
So
a
if
number of people
you're,
that overlap.
yeah, unfortunately, right? The overachievers, right? That's what I call them. You want to get everything. So if we're talking just specifically about POTS, because I know you had mentioned earlier with MCAS, antihistamines are one of the big kind of things to help your body along. What are some things that can people can do that have POTS?
Okay, so it depends on what kind of POTS you have or what kind of dysautonomia you have. There are the people who have low blood pressure, they're going to be lightheaded, that type of POTS. And then there are people who are more what we call hyperadrenergic POTS, where their blood pressure might be high. And so we just have to approach these things in different ways. I would say the majority of my patients have more of that classic low blood pressure, rapid heart rate situation. They stand up, they get really dizzy, maybe they lose consciousness, they're in the shower, they have rapid heart rate, they are heat intolerant, that kind of situation
That's
is
a
the
lot of what I hear too.
majority of the patients. The other type is less common. So for that more general type, the more common type, some really generally easy things is to increase your water and salt intake. So never drink water without electrolytes. We always talk about high blood pressure in the larger society. We don't really talk about low blood pressure being a problem. And so many people are told, oh, you have great blood pressure, you have normal blood pressure. Well, their blood pressure is hanging out around 100 over 60. That's a little low. And if we think about what is blood pressure for, it's to help pump blood from, your feet all the way back up to your heart, or the heart up to the brain. So if we have too low of blood pressure and we have some other stuff going on, like hypermobility, and our blood flow is already compromised, or we have Babesia or Bartonella and we have hypercoagulability, our blood flow is compromised, we need that extra blood pressure to really get blood into the brain, into the legs and back, so we're not having swelling in our legs or feet or ankles, or we actually get enough blood flow to the brain that we're not having brain fog and dizziness like that.
Okay. So, and that makes sense, right? So you would want it on a little bit on the higher side if you call it either or.
Like
All
I
right.
want blood pressure to be closer to 120 over 80, or even a little bit higher is okay, unless you have some risk of a stroke or heart attack, something where we're a little bit more concerned about your heart. But it's fine to be at 120 over 80, or even a little bit higher than that for most people. They're going to feel better that way. And sometimes with my patients, like they're drinking tons of water, but it's just plain water. They're actually depleting their electrolytes and throwing that balance off even more. So,
I didn't think about that. You're
yeah.
right. You're flushing straight water through your body. Okay.
Exactly. And the
So
way
do
we
you
flush
have a
water through is
favorite?
to
So do you
get
have
rid
a
of salt.
favorite kind of salt to put in your water? I mean, I personally love, is it Celtic salt, Celtic salt, whatever
Yeah.
you want to call it.
Celtic salt's great. Himalayan salt's great if you want to do that. If you can stand just salt water, some people
Right.
that taste is not that great. So the electrolyte mixes that I like are Hylite and Relight. Those are good mixes that have a good balance of sodium, magnesium, etc., potassium. IQ Mix is another one. It does have lion's mane in it. So, it might have L-theanine. So if you're sensitive to those things, be careful with that. These electrolytes that I'm talking about do have flavors for the people
So
who
not
can.
just salt water.
Yeah, so it's not just salt water. I think it has stevia and some flavoring in it, to just have it be a little bit more palatable to those people who don't like salt water.
Got it. Right. Yeah. No, and thank you for those tips because sometimes the craziest things we think are just kind of basic. We don't even think about whether
No,
we're
we don't
sick or not,
know
right?
anything.
If it's not on our radar, because
Absolutely.
yeah, we all just drink water, drink water, drink water. But if you're dealing with POTS and you're having that lower blood pressure, you
Can
probably might
worsen
be
it.
making it worse by
Can worsen
drinking
it.
so much plain water. So
Yes.
add your Celtic
Yes.
salt or your electrolytes or whatever you want. Okay. Such
Yes.
fabulous tips. I love it. Thank you
It
so much.
sometimes takes care of people's fatigue, or like drastically improves people's energy levels because they're actually getting good blood flow throughout their body, and their brain fog decreases when they add in salt into their. Yeah, it's so simple, but can really make a drastic change.
Love it. And that's what we like, the simple things. There's a hard enough things, so many hard things we have to deal with this disease. So we like anything simple and easy that we can do. Oh my gosh. Okay, so much. And I always love learning so much more because I did not know a lot about POTS and I didn't know that there were two types as well. And like you mentioned, there's one more familiar to most of us within this Lyme world. So that is awesome. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about another topic that doesn't get brought up a lot. And we did just a little bit earlier in the show, metal toxicity. I think that there's, so many ways to get it. I mean, we can even just go back to the, the silver amalgams in our mouth, right?
Yes.
But there's also, probably food and waters, and so much. And so talk about the importance of, I don't know if it's something that you recommend you kind of test for initially, like you would maybe mold, or is that more along the lines of if you're treating somebody and after a while something is off, is that then when you kind of look into the metal toxicity?
Yeah, more the latter. So
okay.
If I'm treating mold and Lyme and parasites, all these things, and there's still some symptoms, especially neurological symptoms, or just a bizarre thing going on. Their kidney function is always really low for some reason, or their lungs seem to not be responding to the regular treatments that we would do for the lungs. Then I start to think, okay, is there something going on with heavy metals? This is usually lifetime accumulation. So it is going to be more present for me in patients who are postmenopausal, for instance. And the reason I say that is a lot of these heavy metals get stored in the brain and the bone, they get stored away. So as we age and as we go through menopause and our hormones shift and we start to lose bone density, that's really where heavy metals becomes extremely important, because now we are releasing those heavy metals from the bones. And now we have higher levels of heavy metals circulating around, whereas most of our life it was stored away, maybe we're releasing a little bit, our body can handle detoxifying it. Now suddenly we're releasing the stores.
Interesting. I never would have thought about that. Okay. It's always good to know, because, we dump oftentimes a lot of money into testing, right? So do I need to run out and do, this huge panel of metal toxicity test? Yes. So that could be the little missing piece, like a lot of times mold or parasites is as well.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So in your opinion, what do you feel is the best way to test for metal toxicity? Is it blood,
urine,
saliva, hair? So urine.
Through the urine is going to be the best, because a lot of heavy metals are going to be excreted through the kidneys, and then some are through the stool, a little bit through the sweat. But the most reliable way is going to be through the urine. And the way I do it, and it's actually not that expensive of a testing process compared to a lot of our other specialty testing. I want to say it's less than $100 per urine heavy metal test. I usually use doctor's data.
Okay.
And what we do is a first morning void. So you sleep all night, you wake up in the morning, the first urination that you have, you collect, and then you send that off to the lab. That's a random collection. And then I compare it to a provocation. And by that, I mean, I give you something that chelates, meaning binding to the metals. So it's going to pull heavy metals out into the bloodstream and then into the urine that otherwise would have just been hidden in the tissues.
Okay.
So I will provoke with whatever chelating agent that I will be using for them to treat if we do find heavy metals.
Okay. And that I've heard that before a lot with just people in the community. They say that they're going to go get tested for Lyme and the co-infections and do this and this and this to draw it out. And, I don't hear a lot about it, but I've heard that before. And so that makes sense to kind of get your first collection of urine and then do something to bind it and draw it out and then check it again. And what do you see mostly? Because, you've got mercury and lead and cadmium, and are there specific ones that you're seeing more of?
So, and the reason we do a random and a provoked is the random kind of gives us a baseline of how much you're excreting on a regular basis. So that gives us a clue into, are you being currently exposed to high heavy metals, or is the body burden more just, from the past? So if you have high heavy metals on that random test, now I'm concerned, like, we got to check your environment, or are you losing bone density? What's going on that you're releasing so many heavy metals currently? Because they're so toxic that your body does a pretty good job of putting them away. So if there's a lot of circulating heavy metals, we need to know, are you being currently exposed? It's varied what I see. High levels of arsenic and aluminum are pretty high for a lot of people. Mercury and lead are big ones. There are higher concerns, lead and mercury, especially, you know, they really affect the brain. They really affect the heart. And so we are more concerned about those ones. And then I've just seen a variety of things. Thallium is another one I see high levels of, especially in our population, interestingly, because thallium is in the soil and it gets picked up by kale and other dark leafy greens. So our healthy greens that we love to eat can pull thallium, especially kale, from the soil. We just live in a toxic world, unfortunately.
We
it doesn't
do,
mean
yes.
don't eat kale, but you know.
Yes, this, yes. And yeah. Back to your same point, if you can't do everything right, like we work so hard to try to clean up our environment, you know, things that we put on our bodies, cleaners we use in our home. Mm-hmm. We can only do so much. We are never going to live in a perfect world.
Perfect.
It is just toxic, right?
Yep. Yep.
Toxic
so you
world,
support
toxic
your body.
People.
Right. So you
yes.
just support your body.
Yeah.
And that's where like the cell membrane or the detox support comes in, is like, yeah, we're always going to be exposed to something. So how can we make sure our body is as resilient as possible, minimize what we can so we're not being bombarded by toxins, but knowing that we will still be exposed to toxins, still be exposed to pathogens, that happens.
Right.
Yeah.
And all the more reason we really want to keep that strong foundation or terrain so that in the future, when things come up with people that have recovered from this illness, we don't get attacked or brought back down, right?
Yes.
So, all right. So let's talk about kind of your protocol, your how you look at it. And by the way, thank you so much for just touching on those and really breaking them down, because I think it will be very helpful for many listeners out there that are, you know, a little confused on, you know, I know quite a bit about MCAS, but not super familiar with POTS because I didn't have it. And so I think it's just good information that, you know, knowledge is power, right? We want to be knowledgeable on all the different topics. So thank you for really just diving in and giving us a real clear view on exactly what these are.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about your practice. And I know that, you know, you had mentioned already that you are very into the cell membrane therapy, and we'll talk about kind of what that is. But what is your overall approach, right? Like, you kind of want to know what a patient is dealing with. Do you do clinical diagnosis? Do you want lab work done? How is that? And then obviously you had already shared with us that you're going to lower that histamine response, right? Before you do things. Are there anything else? Do you build up the immunity before you start breaking things down? Do you work on the gut? Like, just kind of your overall, again, there is no one
there's
answer.
No one
we
right.
know,
yeah, there's
right?
No one
But
right
just
answer,
kind of an
but
overview of, you know, so listeners can kind of get a take
get a
on
sense.
your approach. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, there is no one approach, but it really is sitting down with a patient and getting a really thorough history. And I give the patients the time to go into all these little details, because it may not be significant to you, or you may not see the connection between what you're talking about 20 years ago and what's going on with you now. But me, as a clinician, I am trained to pick up patterns. So I'm listening for the pattern over the lifetime, because things usually get more dysfunctional over time if we don't do anything about it. So it's like, okay, it started here. This was our baseline. And then this got added and this got added. So I'm looking for that. And that pattern helps me guide me to think, is this more infection? Is it more environmental toxins? You know, where are we at? Do we need to focus on the gut? Usually by the time they get to me, they've been to a million other doctors and a lot of other naturopathic doctors. So they've already done a lot of the baseline work of, I've already done SIBO and I've worked on my gut and I've done food allergy testing and all this stuff. So Depending on the comprehensive testing that they've had in the past, we might, or the clinical picture, it might be really clear to me, like, okay, this is, it's probably Lyme disease, you know, let's kind of go ahead and
Right.
go into treatment, or maybe we do some minimal testing, but we kind of dive right into a protocol versus
And
other
that's
people.
probably like a good and bad thing. You get
Yeah.
somebody who's done all the testing, so you can see that and just kind of, put that by the wayside.
Yeah.
But then on the flip side, I've been to every doctor and I don't trust any of them, right? Like,
Yeah. Yes.
so it's
Yes. There is a little bit of that. There
that.
is a little bit of like
Right.
a, with any of our patients building that trust because they
Right.
have usually been so gaslit by other doctors. But it's, you know, I don't mind at all if they've been to a bunch of doctors and they are like, I don't really trust the medical system. As long as there's like, okay, but got to be open a little bit to that
Yes.
somebody could help you because otherwise nobody could help you.
Yes, exactly.
But yeah, I do like to combine clinical diagnosis with testing. I like to back up what I am saying with some actual objective evidence, if that is even possible with what we're talking about. Some things, it's just like MCAS. I'm not going to do any testing unless the patient really pushes for it because the testing is just not accurate. It's just not there.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, the best thing to do with MCAS is to start treating it. And if you respond to the treatment, you have MCAS, you know, like
You have your answer.
that's,
Yes.
you have your
Yes.
answer. Yeah. So it's going to be more important for me to take action in that case versus, you know, mess around with a lot of testing. But Lyme disease, mold toxicity, I do want to do some testing. For mold in our practice, and this might be a little unique, is that we're not so focused on mycotoxin testing of the body.
Okay.
We're not looking for what types of mycotoxin do you have and how much you're excreting. We do some of that sometimes. But mainly, if we suspect you have mold exposure, we're more concerned about are you currently in mold? Like
Okay.
we want to have your resources go toward, because you know it's an expensive process. We want to allocate your resources more towards finding out if you're currently being exposed. And I like to give this example of it's like being in a sinking boat with a hole. If you are so focused on just getting the water, like you have to get water out with a bucket. But if you don't plug up that hole, you're never going to get there, right? And that hole is finding out, are you currently being exposed? Because we can detox you from whatever toxins we see, but if we don't handle the environment, it's a little bit of an uphill battle. It's still worth doing. Like you can't just
Right.
sit there and have
No,
the
that
water
and
build
that
up.
makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense because a lot of times, right, if we have mold in, we want to kill it and get rid of it. But if you have only one choice of the two options, do I
Yes.
test my body or do I test my home? You would
Yes.
say test your home
Test
first.
your
And
home.
actually it makes sense because you
Yeah.
have to know where it's coming from.
Yes.
And
Because
maybe
if
it
your
was
home is
coming
clear,
from
then
your
great.
old workplace, right?
Yeah, it could be
Because
an old home, an old apartment, your
I'm
workplace.
assuming that we, maybe all of us have a little bit of mold toxicity in our body, right? But we don't know it until we get bit by a tick or until
Yes.
you, oftentimes even
Something
vice
happens.
versa, right? Like we have Lyme disease, but we have no symptoms. And then we get exposed to mold. And then boom,
Yes.
now all of a sudden, yeah. So it
Exactly.
kind of goes hand in hand that way. So that's good. So we want to know if you're in it or not. Okay.
Yeah. And the reason we do it that way, not only because of what I just said, but also, yes, there are certain binders that get these toxins out better. But they all generally work, you know, they kind of all generally work. And we usually are working you through kind of all of them if you can tolerate it. So kind of doesn't matter as much to us which specific toxin you have, unless it's helpful for you to know, for your brain to
Right.
organize, like, this is why I'm having this. And when do I stop detoxing like that? Otherwise, it's not as pertinent to us as a clinician to know. Because some people have severe constipation. I'm not putting those people on binders. They can't hand, they, what are we going to do? Like they're going to bind it and then just going to sit around in the intestines and get reabsorbed. That's not helpful to
Right.
them.
No.
So, you know, in that way, I'm more interested in, okay, are you currently in mold? Let's try to allocate some resources to handling that situation because that's going to be a process. And then in the meantime, what can we do to support you? Because it might be that we just have to get your bowel movements going again before we even touch binders.
Right. Yeah, because it's so important to be getting these toxins out of our body. And
Yes.
I'm glad that you had brought that up because a lot of people will take binders but don't realize exactly what they're doing, right? Like it's kind of like a little magnet too. It's
Yes.
magnetizing whatever toxin you're pulling out of your body. But if you're
Yes.
not pooping it out,
Just get
you actually could
reabsorbed.
be doing worse, right? Because
Yeah.
now it's all in one and now you're just dispersing it all back in through your body that it just pulled out from different parts.
Yep.
So
That's exactly
having
right.
regular bowel movements is so important.
I love talking about poop,
So do
and I just want to
I.
say, like, you should have at least one bowel movement a day. So many of my patients come in who have had lifelong constipation. So they're like, well, it's normal for me. I go once a week. I'm like, oh my gosh. No, like, we need to, that is not okay. Like, we need to do something about this. Like, we are aiming for at least one, ideally two bowel movements a day, maybe even more than that, depending on your fiber intake. But I would rather you err towards diarrhea or loose stools than constipation, because then, at least you're moving things through your body. We don't want too loose, right? Then you're not absorbing nutrients, but I don't want you to be constipated. Yeah.
Now we talk about all the not so fun stuff, right?
Yeah.
I do. I'm like, if
Yeah.
you know me at all, I talk about poop all the
I
time.
talk
I
about
talk
all
about
that stuff.
parasites all the time.
It
Somebody's
doesn't
ever,
even faze me anymore. I'm like
I
eating
know.
food and I'm talking about poop. I'm like, oh, it's fine.
I'm glad I'm not the only crazy one
Nope.
because I if I'm showing somebody pictures on my phone, you know, from a trip, I'm like,
Yeah.
just beware. You might see a picture of poop, or you never know what you might see
Yeah.
on my phone. So I'm just letting
Right.
you know, enter at your own
Right.
risk, right?
Right. Exactly.
Okay, so
Yeah.
that's really interesting, and it makes sense that let's, no matter what type of mycotoxin you have in your body, right? Like the binders are going to pull up different ones and pull them out. The most important factor is are you living in mold? That's the
Yeah.
most important thing. Okay, so now
Yes.
you're going to address
Yes.
this with your patients.
Yep, exactly.
And then does everybody kind of do this membrane, cell membrane therapy that you talk about? Because that's like kind of your
Yeah,
main,
that's
there's
our
not a
main
lot of
thing.
main protocols, but you know, I know that there's like
Yes.
people do SOT therapy or, you know, so there are some
Yeah.
set therapies that everybody does. So I know that that's one of your big ones.
Yes, we really believe everyone can benefit from cell membrane therapy. Now, it just depends on what level of cell membrane therapy you're doing, right? So there's the full IV and oral protocol. If you do the full cell membrane protocol, it's going to include IVs, it's going to include orals. It's going to be very high doses of phosphatidylcholine. But there are other people for whom either the finances don't work out, or they're not that sick. They don't have a lot of symptoms. They get mostly better. And we're thinking, you just need to heal a little bit of that cell. We just need a little extra support for the cell membrane. In which case, it's more going to be the oral supplements. And maybe you don't do the IVs, or maybe you just do a couple of the IVs and you don't do the full protocol.
So we
Yeah.
have some options here, which is nice.
Yes. Yes. Any bit of cell membrane therapy is going to be helpful. The idea being that the membrane is made of these lipids, phospholipids, cholesterol, etc. But the phospholipids being the main part of it, and they're susceptible to oxidative stress. So that can include mental, emotional stress, can include toxins, it can include infections, cause a lot of oxidative stress. It's part of living life. You're just going to accumulate some stress. And so if we've ever gone through a period of acute stress or even prolonged extreme stress, our ability to have handled that without accumulating a little bit of damage is kind of low. So this is a way that we push out that dysfunctional stuff and give it nice, healthy new lipids.
And so that's really interesting because like we've mentioned many times that we live in a toxic world, right? Mm-hmm. Stress is high. We're always on the go. There's never enough hours in the day. And so just mm-hmm. a general person, right, is going to mm-hmm. have a lot of, or at least a good amount of cell damage, right? And mm-hmm. I know that our mm-hmm. cells can, you know, repair and stuff like yes. that, but you're taking that normal person, right? And then you're adding on Lyme disease or some type of yes. chronic infection. And so now it's just multiplied.
Yes.
And so it sounds like a very important piece that we need to address is mm-hmm. working on this cell membrane.
Yeah. And I do think that's where, like, even just a normal adult, you know, we start to get a little fatigued. We start to have little aches and pains. Maybe our brain doesn't function as well as it should. Our hormone levels get a little off. That's just like a normal human
yeah.
that doesn't
yeah.
have chronic disease. I think those people could use cell membrane therapy, would have them optimize their function. So it's, yeah, it's like that.
Okay. And that would be probably one of those people that could do the oral versus...
Yeah.
Because they're not dealing with two whammies, right? Like my
Yeah.
age, I've had, you know, 50 years of just the world attacking my cells.
Yeah.
And then now
yeah.
I have Lyme disease attacking my cells. Like I might need the full borderline. Okay. And
Exactly.
so is that just, what is that protocol like? Is it just pills that you would normally take orally, or is it the same thing in an IV form? And is there like a time frame for them? Like, do you, if you're going to,
Yes.
let's say we're going to do the oral, or do you take a pill every day and then we up it in, you know, 2 weeks, or what?
Yeah.
Explain it a little bit.
Great. So it's person dependent. Ideally, what we would do is we would do some testing for you so we can just assess where it's at. Okay. Are you deficient in this or that? Or what's your levels of these different things that we're trying to add to your system? That way we can be a little bit more direct about, okay, you're missing omega-3s, let's give you omega-3s, or you're missing phosphatidylcholine, let's give you phosphatidylcholine. So these are all supplements that we can give, or you can get some of it from your diet, where we can really be specific about it for your body if we actually do some testing. The general types of supplements that we're taking, and really it is best if we have some clue of how much of this are we going to need, you know,
right.
What is your picture? How are you tolerating it? So there are oral phospholipid supplements. We have several brands that we like to use. Some of them are in powder form. We have them in liquid form and also in capsule form. So depending on the patient and what they need, we might choose one of any of those three things. One of our favorites is the Return Healthy Phospholipid Synergy. That's a nice one to have.
Okay.
Another one is, I think it's called Professional Formulas. It's their sunflower PCPEPI formula. That's just the phospholipids and sunflower based. And then Body Bio also has some good PC. So that takes care of the phospholipid aspects of it. In our lecture at ILADS, we talked a lot about the different downstream products of when we have oxidative stress, we can make all these products that then create more oxidative stress. So one of them being something called malonyldialdehyde, MDA. It's like this fat, waxy substance that gets put into the membrane and then the membrane becomes dysfunctional. Butyrate is going to be one of the best things to help push that out. Butyrate is what's in butter. It's also what some of our intestinal bacteria can create butyrate from what we eat. If you have a healthy microbiome, it really is what feeds our intestinal cells, but then it does all these other things. So it comes in supplement form. It comes in a bunch of different forms, sodium butyrate being an easy one for most people.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
So by doing this therapy,
yes,
are we creating a strong foundation, a strong terrain, so that we can then go and kill the pathogens?
Yeah.
Or are we creating this strong terrain and let's see if your body will kill things off? Like, is it kind of,
Great.
could it be either or?
Yeah. Great question. So it's both. The membrane does a lot in the body. It's our interface with the outer world. It's how we understand what's happening around us and we respond properly. So everything is happening via the membrane interface. So there's the cell membrane, which is what the therapy is based on, but inside the cell, like the mitochondria, is also surrounded by membrane. It's made of similar things, phospholipids. So and our immune cells as cells, they are also made of phospholipids. One of the things that happens with our immune cells, one of the things it can do is it can eat a pathogen and break it down inside. It can't do that if the phospholipid balance is off. It cannot eat pathogens or break them down. So you are strengthening your immune system by healing the cell membrane. You're strengthening your mitochondria, which makes energy for the body, by healing the cell membrane. And you're strengthening, kind of all of your cell function is dependent
Okay.
on this membrane working properly. And we see this especially with the neurological symptoms. We can really help people's neurological symptoms by healing the cell membrane because the brain is made of fats mostly, right? The brain is
Right.
a majority of it is fats.
Interesting. All right. Well, that was, I think, the perfect answer because we want to have both sides, right? Like,
Yes.
because truly, our bodies are amazing. They are designed to heal themselves.
Yes.
And that sounds like this is a perfect example of it, right? But we have to fuel it with the proper things, or we need to remove the things that are not doing any good in our body. And it sounds
Yeah.
like that's what this cell membrane therapy does. And so,
It flushes things out. So it flushes out mold toxins, heavy metals. Some of these bacteria are hiding inside, or some of these infections are hiding inside of our cell. If we don't have proper membrane, we cannot push them out of the cell. So it helps our body push the infections out or break them down in the body. So it's supporting all these different processes.
yes, I love it. Ah, oh, that's amazing. All right. So, is there any last thing that you want to, any nugget or any tip or anything else? I mean, this has just been packed full of such great information, and we kind of touched on
A
so
lot of
many
different
different
things.
things. You know, even just a little bit of the mindset too, right? In our thoughts and our words. And so, what else did we miss? Did we miss anything?
I'm not sure. I feel like we touched on a lot of things. We didn't have time to dive deep into anything. So feel free, if there's something that your listeners are like, I wish you would have gone more into this topic. I'm more than happy to come back and talk about any of that. I would just say, I am inspired by and touched and moved by my patients every day and what they go through. And I just want to tell all of them or anyone who's going through that process, like, keep on going and find the people who are really going to fight for you, because there are practitioners like that out here. There are people that want to help you and are willing to dig deeper and get the training that we need in order to figure out these complex illnesses. Don't give up just because all the people in your life don't know what's going on. They may not know what they're talking about. It takes a lot of extra effort to learn all these things, as you know. I mean, since you had to learn it for yourself, it does take going above and beyond. And I don't blame other practitioners for not doing it. It's a major time commitment, a major financial commitment, a major mental, emotional commitment to do this work. But there are people out there. So don't let the people in your life, if they don't believe you, don't let them discourage you from finding the help that you actually need.
Yes, perfect. I love that. I love that. And yes, as always, listeners, all the information will be in the description of this episode. So if you'd like to reach out, and of course, I always want to have you back. Dr. Semelis, this has been so amazing. Thank you for just being that compassionate practitioner and taking care of these patients. I was one myself, right? And it's a hard journey, and to be able to know that there are doctors out there that will sit and listen to us and will believe us and will get to the root of what it is, but also help you allocate your financial resources, right? Because that's a struggle as well. And it sounds like you do all of this all wrapped up in one. And I just appreciate you and what you do for our community. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me and share all the stuff. I so appreciate you.
You're welcome. Thanks for doing this.
I sure hope you listeners enjoyed that episode. Whether it's hope you needed, a little inspiration today, or just maybe some validation that what you're feeling, what you're going through is real. Maybe you needed tips on how to treat at home, ideas, thoughts, detoxing, whatever it is. I truly just hope it's what you got out of today's episode. That is my only hope, is just to give back to this community in any way possible. So go to the about of this podcast, scroll down to the bottom and find that donation link. Go ahead and click on there, and anything that you'd like to donate or offer is all just going to go to help to pay towards the studio cost.